Insights. My name is Craig, and today we're going to talk about labeling and just the idea and this concept in psychology that we actually call social labeling theory. And there's a lot of interesting things that are really applicable to just our real everyday life, and I want to share them with you so that you may be able to address some of the labels you may give yourself or that you may inadvertently give other people. So in order for us to talk about this, first things first, let's talk about what a label is in the context of psychology and how it works. So a label is something that we give. It's actually a shortcut for our brain. Our brain comes up with labels or categories, if you will, for all kinds of different things. And what this is a mental shortcut for us, so that our brain doesn't have to figure out new phenomenon or new traits for every single thing. So for example, dogs. I have my own two dogs. I've had pets in my life most of the time growing up. And I'm one of those people that you might call a dog person, if you will. So this idea is that I have in my mind a label or a category or understanding of a dog, and because of that, I have certain attributes that I give to any dog, even if I don't really know them. Like I have attributes that I give to dogs that they may be friendly, or that that they may sleep, 14 hours a day, that they may bark at people that go by. I have certain attributes that I give to dogs that they're playful and they enjoy playing, or they enjoy just being petted or cuddled or whatever it may be, that I have these certain traits that I picture with most dogs. And because of that label, there's a certain way that I end up treating dogs. I end up treating them very friendly. Even if a dog doesn't actually have these traits, like I said, it's a mental shortcut. So that if I meet a new dog, I'm going to assume that that dog likes to be pet. I'm going to assume that that dog is friendly towards people, because that's mostly my experience, right? So labels are a quick shortcut for us, so that our brain doesn't have to waste all this or consume all this mental energy that actually turns into physical resources in our body. It doesn't have to consume all these resources to try to figure things out. Instead, it's able to make these jumps in logics or these assumptions to help really save us time, which is really useful. I can only imagine that what it would be like if every time I got into a car, I had to rediscover how to drive that car, because my brain didn't assume that it was the same as every other car that I've been in, that it has a gas pedal on a certain side, has a steering wheel, there's the gear shift, all these different things. It would be really strange if I got into a car and every single time I'd be like, okay, I need to rediscover where everything is, only to find out that it's actually in this similar place. No different than different bicycles that I get on, or it might be the same where I'd assume that most homes have a kitchen, or I assume that most homes have a bathroom or anything like that. So this is something that's extremely useful for us, because it saves us tons of time, right? I don't want to have an idea that I'm going to go to a grocery store and I might not be able to buy popcorn at the grocery store, because that's kind of one of the things that I associate with a grocery store. I might not be able to buy butter or eggs or milk or meat or anything like that. Now, there are times where, of course, those labels are incorrect, right? I could come across a dog that's actually not friendly, doesn't like being pet, or I could go in a car if I travel over. I'm in the United States now. I could travel over to some parts of Europe and I'd be like, well, the steering wheel and everything is on the other side and this is different for me. But at the end of the day, the labels really help us for a lot of different things. The challenge that we get into is they're so helpful that we use them for most everything, and this most certainly goes with people. This is one of the ways that prejudice rises. This is one of the ways that whether it's sexism or ageism, These are basically how a lot of these negative traits may come about, because we have certain experience with people that we then develop a label for, and then that automatically gets attributed to everyone that meets those certain criteria. Like, for example, if I have terrible experience with adult men, then I might develop a label that adult men are not safe for me to be around. So that anytime I'm around an adult man, I'm a little more on edge. And the same thing can go with adult females or children, or you know, every time I'm around children, they hate me because they start crying. So I just hate being around children because I already know that they're not going to like me. So we can develop these labels around anything. And we can get into some really tricky situations. And I fall prey to this just like anyone else does, that you meet people, and even ones that you kind of know for a little bit, you end up developing these labels that you kind of place on them. Like I said, it's for shortcuts, and it's actually something that's really helpful for our brain. But there are real downsides to it, and it's something that we have to be aware of and conscious of. So I want to actually tell you a story. Whenever my son Nathan was born, I remember him being born in the first 10 minutes. He starts crying, right? Because like all of a sudden he's in a really cold place. It was a lot warmer inside mom and all these different things. And he was crying, and I made this joke that I still have sometimes today that I'll make with my wife. Oh man. Maybe we should name him Oscar the Grouch instead. And, you know, it was a kind of a funny thing, but I remember my wife kind of talking to me seriously one day. She's like, I don't want you actually saying that to our son. She goes, because if you say it to that son, he may, you know, to our son, as he gets older and he starts to realize what that means, what if he starts to wonder, am I a grouch? you know, and there is something that is so true about that. And we have research to back this up. So like I said earlier, there's actually a theory behind this in the field of psychology called social labeling theory. And what it is that we can do the same thing where we give labels to certain people or certain groups of people, and it can become really detrimental to them. And one area where research is most centered around was the idea of calling people that have criminal records criminals, actually calling them criminals, or calling them sneaks or thieves or anything like that. And one of the things that happens is as someone gets labeled as such, that we know that if someone is called something throughout their life, whether or not it's a liar, a cheater, or if they're called like a criminal, or they're just deceptive or anything like that, that they will actually start to take on some of those attributes that they feel fits that label. Most of the people that end up in our criminal justice system in one way or another, they have been told throughout their life that they're a bad person, or that they don't make good decisions, or you know, XYZ or whatever it may be. And now they go through our criminal justice system and they end up getting this new label, criminal, felon, whatever it may be. And because that label has been assigned to them, and it's something that they're aware of, they're actually more likely to behave in what our society's eyes look at for that kind of label, like a criminal or a felon or anything. They're actually more likely to behave that way because people subtly and a lot of times unconsciously actually treat them that way. So there's a lot of power in this idea of labeling and what it does. And for us, and for those of you guys that are listening to this, one of the most important things is how we actually end up labeling or using these labels around our children. So yeah, there's this whole societal aspect where it'd be great for us to move away from labeling certain things. And that may be a conversation for another day, or maybe just depending on the time that I talk about a little bit after this. But I think that one of the most important things is how we actually talk to our children and the kind of words and vocabulary that we use to describe them. If I continue calling my son Oscar the Grouch whenever he's upset, then he's going to internalize that he is a grouch. And if he's going to internalize that he is a grouch, guess what he's going to do? He's going to be grouchy more often. Of course, there are circumstances where he may lean the other way, but ultimately, one of the things that he will internalize is that it's not okay to be a grouch. Dad isn't pleased about that. So it's not okay to complain about things, or it's not okay to be upset. And me, as a, you know, as a licensed counselor, I never want my son to get that idea that he can't be upset. That's a normal part of being human. Sometimes things don't go our way, or we wake up on the wrong side of the bed or anything, and you know, we can try to have the opportunity to turn that around. But sometimes it's just going to be a bad day, because every day cannot be 100% great. And I don't want my son to attribute those types of labels to him. You know, just like another label that we might give our children is that they're stubborn. Or we might give them the label that they're messy. Or we might even give them the label that they're really smart. Because even positive labels can have certain implications. And don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here talking to you about this stuff so that you're like, oh, like I should never tell my child that they're smart or that they're good at something. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is being aware of the labels that you use and how your child might internalize it is something that's really important. One of the things that I had growing up is I was always told that I was smart. And because of that, whenever something was challenging for me in school, it was kind of like a double whammy where I felt really stupid, because if I was so smart and I was supposed to know this stuff, then I'm just not as smart as people thought. Or I just act like that, hey, you know what? I'm too good for this, or this doesn't really matter to me, and that's why I'm not doing well at it. It's not because, you know, it's because I'm not trying or anything like that. So the labels that we have or that we kind of get put on us can affect behavior in a really real way. So that means that whenever we're actually putting labels on our children, because like we will no matter what, it's like I said, it's how our brain is wired. That means that we have to be really conscious about the labels that we're going to put on. And, you know, there are some really good labels, like you could be like, you're a hard worker, or wow, you're a really great problem solver, you know, or you're really good at pushing yourself to solve a problem or figure things out, or you're really creative. There are different labels that we can put on that ultimately have a lot of positivity to them. Or like I said, even going back to the intelligence one, it's like, wow, whenever you work hard, you know, it really shows how smart you are. It helps internalize different things. One, we can affect how hard we work on different things. And that's not like a static trait, right? If I'm telling my son, you are a grouch, there is no wiggle room there. But if I tell him, hey, you know, whenever you don't get enough sleep, it feels like you're more of a grouch, or you are a grouch. Well, that's something that he may be able to change and may be able to adjust. It's not a label just on his whole person. And that's something that is just important for us as parents, or even just us as people, to be aware of these labels that we put on and like start to be thinking about, well, what are some of these labels that are okay like for my kids, and what are some of them that aren't? But then even take that a step further. What are some labels that I put on myself, right? Do I put on these labels of myself that, you know, I have to be the best parent in the world? Or do I put some of these labels on myself that I have to earn a lot of money, or that I have to be the smartest, or I have to be the most well-informed, or I have to always be in control, or whatever it is, whatever these labels or these perceptions that we have of the different roles that we have, right? If the the label of a parent in my mind, and some of the attributes associated with that label are to always be in control of their mood, to be a phenomenal parent all the time, to be able to have well-disciplined kids, to be able to have the time to keep your home tidy and to help kids with homework, and to basically be available to your kids. If those are the ideas and labels that I have behind being a parent, I'm going to be in for hard reality, because I'm not going to be able to achieve all those all the time. And then I start to internalize that I must be a bad parent, because I'm not reaching up to that label. I'm not measuring up. So actually, I like the way that I explained that a little bit better. So the labels that we have and those ones that we give ourselves, it's important for us to see like how much. So for example, I think I shared this in another one. So I'm a business owner. I run my own practice. And being that as it may, whenever I tell people that I own my own business, there's all kinds of attributes that they might assign. There's all types of things that the things that they've labeled in their head of the business owner should be get assigned to me. Like, oh, you must work a ton and you must earn a decent living, or you must be a real go-getter or anything like that. So these things that they attributes that they automatically end up assigning to me mean that they treat me a certain way. And shoot, it's nice, because usually whenever you tell people you're a business owner, they treat you pretty well, because that's kind of how our society treats business owners. They treat you pretty well in most circumstances, which is nice. But since the other labels are getting associated with me, right? Oh, if I'm not earning as much as I think I should as a business owner, gosh, I internalize that I must suck as a business owner. I'm not very good, or I'm really lazy, or I need to be working harder, right? So there's all types of ways that the labels that we have and the attributes that we have for those labels can affect us and our psyche, right? Whether or not it's a parent, whether or not it has something to do with our job, whether or not it has something to do with our religious beliefs, whether or not it has something to do with how we see ourselves in our extended family, or how we see ourselves in the community or the society, right? If I have this idea or this concept of myself that, hey, you know what? I believe that every person should be giving back to their community. And I talk to one of my close friends, and they don't donate to charity, they don't volunteer time, they don't do any of that stuff, because I have that label of like, this is just how people are supposed to be, then I could start to get a bad taste in my mouth around them. So for us in these labels, one, it's important for us just to explore and understand these labels that we put on others and that we put on ourselves, but for us also to revisit them and to see if they are actually realistic. I can tell you right now, as a parent, there's been a lot of times where I have revisited how realistic my label has been as a parent. Like, yeah, I don't have to, I don't have to have a perfect control of my temper all the time, because sometimes I lose it. And I need to walk away for a couple minutes and do some breathing exercises and just sit there and like, okay, I'm all right. Things are going to be okay. I'm going to go back in there and like, I'm going to say sorry and I'm going to try to reset this, right? So there are opportunities that over time I have had to actually confront this idea that I've had of what a parent should be and how they should be. Because if I don't do that, then I'm going to start to think that I'm a bad parent, that I'm a bad father. And I know that that is something that's really harmful for me to start thinking, because it's something that I see all the time in the clients that I work with. It's something that I see all the time if you just talk to people that are other parents or anything like that, like the guilt that parents have about like, oh, I didn't, I can't feed my kids something healthy 100% of the time, or I eat like crap, or I can't succeed at my diet, or I can't succeed at my exercise regimen, or whatever that may be. because we have these certain labels or these expectations of ourselves, right? That a productive member of society should be, you know, they should be a part of the community. They should be well adjusted at home. They should know exactly what to do in different situations. They should pay their taxes. They should be on committees, on boards. They should do all these different things, right? If I have that label of that's what I should be, wow, I am setting really high expectations for myself. You know, if I, the examples that I could give are endless around this. So it's good for us to kind of revisit some of these labels and really just how it makes us feel. Because social labeling theory is real, and even though we can place these labels on other people, right, like I said with the criminals or the felons, there are more potent labels that people have. Right now, whenever this is being recorded, and I would guess in the foreseeable future, that politics is a huge area of this, where if you're Republican or Democrat or you're liberal or you're conservative or whatever you may be, that if I know what political party affiliation you have, I am automatically making certain assumptions about you. That is social labeling theory at its finest. And it doesn't take very long. You can get on the internet and you can see people that argue about this stuff. And as soon as someone tells you their position, or you're watching one of these arguments, as soon as someone tells you their position, their political affiliation or whatever, you make all kinds of assumptions about what they believe, what they think, how they vote, all these different things, right? We make all these different assumptions. My wife and I talk about this all the time, that if, you know, her and I, we kind of have this belief that, hey, we need to restructure the school system or something like that, or we need to pay less taxes or something like that, people could automatically look at that and be like, oh, you guys are conservative, or you guys are Republican because you guys lean that way. And you know what? You must also be pro-life. You're probably also Christians. You probably only vote Republican all the way down. You must not believe in science. You know, all these different things that they can do that because that's what their label is for that political party affiliation, right? And the same thing goes the other side, where someone could look and you'd be like, well, since you are a Democrat, you must really want socialist policies. You want big government. You want people to tell you what to do. You want to tax the rich. You know, you want X, Y, Z. So for us, those are really powerful labels, right? We have powerful labels in our political environment because people's brains, right, our brains are trying to make those shortcuts so that we don't have to figure out every individual person and where they lie and what they think and what they believe, because that'd be really hard to do. And because we can, you know, because those shortcuts exist, it leads us overlooking a ton of things, right? So if someone meets me and I tell them that I'm a therapist, right? One of the first things, and most people that are listening to this that are therapists know this, that they'll be like, oh, are you analyzing me? Are you trying to figure out how I think? Are you trying to be a shrink to me or whatever, right? You get all these different things that people say just because that's my career choice. And they do. They have certain labels that they have for me, at the way that I should be behaving, or the way that I think, or the way that I act. And sometimes that leads to people being more guarded, or sometimes it leads to people being way less guarded around me. And because I have that label that gets put on me, that means that I start to act differently too, right? Because traditionally, therapists, we're not supposed to talk about ourselves too much to our clients or anything like that. There are ethical guidelines around that, and there are big opinions in the field about how that looks and how that's structured. So I can even feel myself whenever that label I feel like it's being applied to me, I could feel myself socially pull back, not being as open about, you know, what I think or my background, or not being as open about my personal life, because that's part of that label, right? So the label can go both ways. And even further challenge whenever we kind of get to some of this is that, hopping back to the politics really quick, is that if you're talking to somebody and you tell them that you must be a Republican or you must be a Democrat, and you're automatically assigning all these different things to them, eventually, if you do that enough, they'll start to believe it. If a person has an interaction with people, and we have tons of interactions, you know, throughout a day you might have 100 different interactions with people, and even if it's just like close family or friends, and if the interactions you have with people are colored by what they think about, or like what they know about you, or anything like that, and how you respond, think about all these opportunities you have with these interactions to actually reinforce that social label that somebody gets put on you, which means that if someone is labeled as a Republican or they're labeled as a Democrat, then they are over time, and this could be years and years and years, because that label is being shoved down their throat, they're actually more likely to think that way. They're actually more likely to act in this way, or they're much more likely to push those types of points or that type of agenda, or whatever, you know, whatever word you want to use there. And this is a scary thing. And the thing is, this is something that, like I said, it's been well researched, it's well established. And because it's so well researched and well established, it's something that's done purposely a lot. I mean, think about this. People do this with brands all the time. One of the most famous brands in the world, Jeep. Even as I say Jeep, you may have a certain persona that you think of that, like, oh, it's someone that's freedom loving. They don't mind going off-roading. They're a little more laid back. They like to do the Jeep wave at each other or anything like that, right? Even in my mind, I have this certain label of what I think that someone that owns a Jeep is like. So I'm automatically having these different attributes for them, which means I'm likely to treat them differently, right? It goes both ways, where not only are you able to label yourself or accept some type of label, but other people are able to get you, you know, they're able to have that label too. And that's actually where, you know, circling back full circle, because I got kind of off on a tangent there. Social labeling theory is about society itself placing a label on you, right? So if society itself places a label on you, that means that members and participants in the society are more likely to treat you a certain way just with things that they know about you. Like I said, I'm a therapist, so people learn that I'm a therapist and they treat me a certain way. If I'm a felon, then people are likely to treat me a certain way. If I'm a business owner and people know that, they're likely to treat me a certain way. If I'm a Republican or a Democrat and people know that, they're more likely to treat me a certain way. So because of that, if you get enough people in society that treat you a certain way, they're actually able to push you into that label more, because they only recognize things that are attributed to that label. So this is actually one of my favorite types of examples. So going through school, I was told that I was really smart. But one of the things that I also did pretty well was in athletics. I'm good at most sports. It's something that I've been fairly blessed with, and I enjoy most sports. Not the best, not the worst, usually middle of the road or upper middle of the road, just depending on things that are going on. However, I was never called a jock. Instead, it was more just, you know, the quick wit that I would have or the intelligence that I had that was kind of more celebrated. But if someone is going through school and they are labeled as something like, let's say, a jock or a geek, I think jock is probably the easiest. So in American schools, what a jock means is that they are very athletic, and there are certain labels or attributes that jocks have, where they only care about sports. They're usually not very smart, and they are usually always horny, or they're trying to get like the you know, they're trying to get to the cheerleaders, or they're trying to date the hottest you know, people in school or whatever. So gosh, even I just revealed something about myself, right? I just assumed that a jock was a male, because that's usually what it was attributed to. So the idea is that if I know that someone's a jock, I already had these attributes I just laid out for you. And if I have this idea in my head that a jock cannot be someone that is really super smart, that means that if that student that is labeled as a jock does really well on a test, I'm less likely to actually notice that or recognize how well they did on that test. But if they don't do as well on that test, it's confirmation. Right? It's a confirmation bias. It's a confirmation of something that I believe to be true. So that means that like my brain is wired in such a way that it actually confirms the label that I put on somebody, and it ignores or doesn't even recognize things that are contraindicators towards that label that I put. So let's say, for example, that I know that someone is an atheist, and in my mind I have labeled atheists as people that just don't care about society, they don't give back, they don't give to charity, they don't volunteer, they're just kind of the worst kinds of people. And if that's the label that I have, and I know someone, or actually I know quite a few people that are atheists, and if that is the label, that is the lens, that is the glasses that I'm putting on to look at these people through, then I would be more likely to notice whenever they don't do those things, right? Whenever they go with the label that I have for them, than if they go and work at a soup kitchen, or they actually donate a ton of their money, resources, and time to different events. I'm less likely to notice that because I'm seeking confirmation of this label that I have. And that's one of the things that social labeling theory talks about, is we only react to things that are correct in terms of the label that society is placing on them, and that we are less reactive to things that don't match, which is a terrifying thing. This is actually shown pretty well in a lot of things. This is more anecdotal, but there are different people that have raised their kids in such a way that they have kind of plotted out their course and the career and everything that they'll take and that they'll do, and the kids might follow right along with it, you know, because they treat them a certain way. They ignore things that aren't on that path that they have set for them, and they reinforce things that you know that they are, that are on that path. So they're continuing to reinforce that label until it actually is something that the child internalizes over time. So I've been actually talking a lot about how this is a negative thing, but there's actually a lot of positives too, right? If I am, you know, I think that, oh gosh, I think an easy one, in my opinion, to do is like, if you get people that are, this is just based on my own life experience, and this is just the thing that's coming to mind right now, so that if you get a lot of people that are Christians, and someone that is further along in their journey in Christianity than other people, then they might realize or recognize the forgiveness that is offered to them in this religion, and the opportunity that they have to recognize that their sins have already been paid for, and that they don't necessarily have to feel the same level of guilt and shame that someone that might not be further along on that path than they are. So if I am, and that's a label that ends up growing over time, even as I'm saying this, people are hearing the word Christians, and they already have certain labels that are associated with them. So I know that your brains are already going to certain places. But if I'm someone that's further along in my Christian journey, or my gosh, that's a bad way of putting it. But anyway, if I'm someone that recognizes that, that means that if I do something, I mess up and I sin, it might be a little bit easier for me to get over, or move past, or accept, repent, and move on, or whatever it may look like, because I recognize that that is a trait of being a Christian, that I mess up, and that, you know, I don't always get it right, and that's why the grace of God is there for me. And if I have that as part of my understanding and my label, then I become a lot more resilient, right? Because I'm going to make a mistake. But if I have a label that's attributed to me, whether or not it's, you know, fire and brimstone type of Christian, then every time that I make a mistake, I internalize it as, oh my gosh, I totally messed up. I'm never going to be able to repent for this. I can't ever live up to these standards or anything like that. So even within that own label that you can have, different people that may react different ways based on their own understanding of that label that they have. So there is some type of movement within a label, depending on the culture that you grow up into and the society around you and your own understanding. And that's kind of really what we're targeting is, I have this label on me. I'm a therapist. I have another label on me. I'm a parent. I have another label on me. I'm a husband. All right. I have these labels on me. And for me, I'm just looking for a different wiggle room that I need to recognize, right? Like as a parent, I recognize that I have to be able to forgive myself for whenever I lose my temper, or I have to be able to forgive myself whenever I don't have infinite patience or anything like that, because that's not realistic for me. It's not realistic for most people. So then I get to adjust my expectations or my label internally. And I get to other people that are parents, I get to give them grace for that, or I get to give them leeway because, well, shoot, I know that I can't do that. So for us, recognizing these labels and creating that certain amount of flexibility that we have in the way that we think and the way that we understand, and sometimes outright challenging the labels that we have. So this is something that I find myself having to do all the time, jumping back into politics. This is something I have to do all the time, because being a therapist and having the opportunity to talk to people about different things, a lot of times I get a pretty good idea of what values they have or what goals that they have. And the challenge is that the more and more you get to know somebody, the more and more you realize it's not black and white. The more and more you realize the labels that you may associate with them, they just don't work. And because of that, you have to be a little more flexible in how you think about people. You know, someone may politically be a Republican, but just because they're politically a Republican doesn't mean that they agree with everything that the Republican platform believes in. Or just because someone's a Democrat doesn't mean they believe in everything that the Democratic platform believes. So for us, there's times where we actually have to try to challenge the labels so that we can create more of that mental flexibility. And the problem is that mental flexibility takes energy, it takes time, and like it takes effort, it takes intention to be able to do that. Because if you don't challenge it, and you don't allow that mental flexibility, then your brain's just going to take the easy shortcut every time. And not that the easy shortcut every time is bad, but yeah, it is bad. It is bad because that's what leads to racism. That's what leads to prejudice. That's what leads to sexism. That's what leads to all these terrible things that we were talking about earlier. Because, like I said, the shortcuts are great for helping us conserve mental energy. But at the end of the day, in our society now, it can lead to a lot of incorrect assumptions that we may have about just each other as people. And that can actually make us a lot more judgmental on other people. Oh, I was just thinking about this. So I worked in the addiction field primarily for about 6 years. I think I was actually like a day short of 6 years or something. Anyway, it was about 6 years. And whenever I first went into the field, I had a very harsh idea, or I had a very harsh label for addicts. And over time, as I worked with them more, I started to understand more, and that understanding more changed how I labeled addicts in my head. And it also changed how I how I treated them, how I thought about them, how I understood them, how I cared for them. It changed so many different things about that just because I had more experience and I was able to shift that. And because of that, there's certain assumptions that I had about addicts I just realized were not true. Like a lot of times whenever I thought of addicts, I would think like, well, that they're lazy or they're mentally weak or anything like that. And gosh, were those assumptions that I had based on that label, were they were so incorrect. And they were so wrong. And it took me, it took me some adjusting in how I understood how people that suffer from addiction, how they are and the challenges that they face and that they go through on a daily basis, that allowed me to start to shift that. But also, at the end of the day, that label that I had was extremely unproductive, right? If I have this idea that someone that is, someone that has depression, they just aren't going to be able to do anything productive because of that depression. One, I want to be a pretty bad therapist, but two, that means that I'm not going to waste a lot of time and effort trying to help them, which means that the whole interaction that we have is going to be colored by that label, right? And the same thing was happening with addiction for me. So it's something that's so important for us to be able to challenge these labels that we have, and to be able to be intentional about some of the labels that we do set up, because like I said, they are very useful, right? If I had this label for my wife that she is a wonderful and a great wife, and that's something that I talked to her about, that's something that I recognize, that's how I treat her, is that she is a great and great and awesome wife, then guess what? That's going to be easier for her to internalize. It's going to be, and she may have this own label for herself, but the more and more that I do that, the more and more that I show that, the more and more at least I can help that shift over time. And it may take a long time, but it's something that is a good outcome, and it's better than the other outcome, right? Where I have a different label that, attributes maybe more awful things to her. So I know that there is a lot in this episode around social labeling theory, and just labeling in general, categorizing, and all these different things. And these can be called different things, right? They can be called schemas. They can be called stigmas, or whatever you may decide that you want to call them. Whenever I was just thinking about this labels and social labeling, that was just what came to mind for me based on my background. But I hope that you found this helpful, and I hope that you can look at some of those things in your life and, be curious about it, experiment with it, think about it, and make changes where you decide that you want to, because you're able to do that. Your brain's designed to do that. And I hope that the labels you may have for yourself, that you may be able to make them more malleable, maybe less harsh. Because I know a lot of us, we treat ourselves really harshly. And a lot of times that harshness that we treat ourselves with doesn't actually do us a lot of favors. So I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this episode. If you found this episode helpful, I would ask that on whatever podcast app that you're listening to, you give us 5 stars so that other people can be able to find us and be able to take advantage of this free resource and learning more about mental health and how it works, and be able to make some of these changes themselves. So until next time, I wish you well. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.